Of the redoubt was gone, windblown trash and leaves filling the garage. A warm breeze blew over the men as they glanced at the unfamiliar stars overhead. None of the known constellations were in view.
Resembles the Southern Cross.
JB shrugged.
Could be. But why would the American government set a redoubt in Australia?
Why would they put one in Japan or Russia? Or seal that tunnel closed with plaster? Who the fuck knows? The old Whitecoats were crazy.
Mighty odd.
Somewhere in the back of his mind, Ryan felt as if an important piece of the puzzle of the redoubts had just fallen into place, but he couldn't understand its subtle meaning. This was something he would have to think hard about later. A beeping sounded from his wristchron.
10 more minutes. 5 to reach the Matrans unit. Gives us 5. Double time to the armory.
The men sprinted across the garage, only to find the corridor that led to the armory was also carpeted with leaves, the door sagging on broken hinges, fronting an empty room. The hundreds of shelves were vacant, and not a single ammo clip or loose round was anywhere in sight. Going to a pile of junk, JB lifted the top off a crate marked Claymore Mines. Inside, there were only empty slots in the mass of foam cushions.
Nothing.
JB sailed the lid across the room to crash into a distant wall. Ryan glanced around one last time before heading for the stairs.
This redoubt has been looted long ago. Let's go.
Returning to the Matrans unit, Ryan's watch began to beep a warning as he hit the LD button. The electronic mists rose from the floor, engulfing them once more.
Are we late? Did we miss the 30-minute mark?
Find out soon.
Ryan clutched his long blaster and braced for the coming onslaught of jump sickness. Splashing through the wetlands, the LAV-25 of Alpha Team rolled over snakes and logs with equal ease. Gators hissed and snapped at the vehicle's approach, but backed away from its bad smell and retreated to their secret underwater lairs. Humming insects bobbed about the machine, searching for flesh to feed upon, but found only impenetrable steel and sizzling hot exhaust, the reek killing them in midair. Snug inside, the Sekhmen relaxed in the cool breeze of the air conditioner and ate a meal from MRE packs. The armored wag dipped as its front wheels found a deep hole, then leveled as the back wheel spun in the mud and forced the APC onto hard ground. Thick Spanish moss hung in curtains off the sickly trees, black birds with two heads flying slowly through the humid air. Everywhere, the rusted bodies of pre-dark cars dotted the wetlands. Hoods had been removed, displaying mossy engine blocks to the inclement weather, or exposing gaping holes where the engines had once been. Some of the wags were completely submerged under the water, only their roofs showing, or thin antennas sticking up like metallic reeds. Smoking a cig and eating a sandwich, Lieutenant Brandon wasn't surprised by the condition of the vehicles. Auto junkyards could be looted for lots of things. Tires to resole boots, windshields removed to be windows in a house, seat cloth to make clothing. Radiators made good stills to cook shine. Old-fashioned batteries had lead plates inside to melt into new bullets. Sometimes there were even toolkits in the trunks, or better, suitcases full of clean clothes, and sometimes even blasters. The fuel tanks were always empty. There were magnets in the radio speakers a smart person could use to make compass needles, the needles coming from manual carburetors, not those fancy injector things. Those were useless. Floor mats sewn together made rain gear that could keep you alive in an acid rainstorm, and paper maps in the little dashboard box could be used when you went to the lav. The plastic ones were only good for patching a small hole in a roof, but the paper ones were very good. Oil pans were good cooking pots, hubcaps could be used as plates. Safety harnesses could be made into belts, and you could use the mirrors to reflect candlelight, making one as bright as two. And for reasons lost in time, a lot of cars carried bags of sand or rock salt, for no reason anybody had ever figured out. Rolling over the wrecks, smashing bodies and cracking windshields, the LAV-25 plowed relentlessly through a hanging wall of creepers, passing a tiny island in the shallow water. A few trees covered with moss, partially hit a ramshackle hut of tin and plywood. Rusty license plates shingled the roof, strips of fibrous material from the dashboard firewalls peeking out from underneath, and shiny hubcaps dotted the walls. But there was no way of knowing whether those were for protection or merely decoration. A hairy man clothed in rags and mirrored sunglasses stood by the hut, a homemade blaster made from exhaust pipes tightly clenched in both hands. As the wag neared, he cocked back both hammers until the rocker arm springs clicked into position, ready to drive the nails forward and set off the twin charges. His makeshift weapon loaded with window glass squares and lug nuts, the man braced himself against the numbing recoil of the big bore weapon. Having no interest in wasting ammo or time, the driver rolled past the hermit, Brandon calmly eating his sandwich as he tracked the man with the 25mm cannon merely for fun, but with no intention of firing. The hermit watched the wag until it was a tiny mote in the distance, then as it disappeared into the vines and moss.
"Damn fools! Think that tar is gonna save him?" "Oh!"
The laugh startled some birds, and they took to the sky on ebony wings. Far away, a stinger called for its mate, and something large splashed into the water.
"Idiots!"
The man went inside the tin hut to start to cook dinner. The nets had caught a lot of catfish this day, and he planned to fry the whole batch. He'd make stew from what he couldn't eat at one sitting, and the rest he'd poison and feed to the gators. About time to make some new clothes. As he was rattling the pots and pans, an odd sound made the man turn, and he gasped in shock.
"Who the hell are you?"
He reached for his makeshift weapon. The lance took him full in the chest, going completely through and burying itself halfway through the back wall. Stealthily, the lone barb entered the hut and started to eat the raw catfish quickly. There was no dry earth in the wetlands, and he needed food badly. The men in blue shirts were near. Soon he would have them, and the feasting would truly begin. As the swirling electronic mists faded, Ryan and JB rolled limply on the floor. Opening the door, the other companions rushed into the chamber and checked them for damage. Mildred ran her hands expertly over their forms.
"No wounds. No broken bones, either. Just jump sickness. Help me get them into the room across the hall."
"Not control room?"
"They might be asleep for hours. A double jump can hit hard. Only be in the way in the control room if there's any trouble."
The teenager grunted in agreement.
"Unfortunately, I see no new blasters."
Doc took Ryan by the shoulders while Jack got his feet. Christy and Mildred did the same for JB. The unconscious men mumbled while they were hauled out of the chamber, but the words were too low to understand. Laying them on the carpeted floor in the office across the hall, Mildred slid sofa cushions under their heads to make the men comfortable.
"Sleep is the best thing for them now. I have a big pot of black coffee warming in the kitchen for when they wake up."
Tenderly, Christy brushed a hand along the scar that ran down Ryan's face.
"I'm just glad they came back alive."
"Me too."
"Both tough. Hard chew."
"Hard is not the same as impossible, my young friend."
"Guess it's our turn now."
Christy took the AK-47 from Ryan and checked the clip. Not a shot had been fired. Good. She took the spare clip from his pocket, along with the two Grens. Dean took the other blaster from JB and the Grens. Slinging the blaster over his shoulder, Christy undid her gun belt and gave the Colt 45 to Jack.
"Stay sharp."
"Razor."
The teenager grimly buckled the blaster around his waist. Jack checked the draw and settled the gun belt a little lower on his hips. Closing the door to the office, the companions went back into the control room, Jack and Doc taking positions behind the console, with Mildred staying in the corridor, a primed grin in each hand. Dean swung open the door to the Matran's chamber.
"Ready?"
Briefly, Christy checked her wrist chron, making sure it was working.
"Ready."
Entering the chamber, they closed the door, sat, and waited. Moments later, the primary circuits flared with power, and the mist swirled into existence around their heads and boots, until a silent hurricane of twinkling stars engulfed them, the lights flashing faster and more brightly with every heartbeat.